Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
I think it's everybody's day off today, isn't it? And we're all coming in to have a chat. I like this.
There must be some deeper meaning in this. That's what it is. There must be some sort of uniting union.
I might do it. Good morning.
Ciao, good morning.
Ciao. How are you, Tiziano?
Pretty good, pretty good. It's a good Friday and thank you for having me.
It's lovely to have you here. Welcome to our podcast, Dorothy and the Dealer.
Yes.
We might just get straight into it. Is that okay?
Absolutely, please.
Because of all the tech issues, we've been messing about a bit, so we might as well just get started. So we like to start our podcast, Tiziano, I'm just throwing you in the deep end a little bit here, with sharing a song that is your go-to song at the moment, something that you love to sing or listen to. What have you got going on at the moment?
in a loving ex moment, like I'm listening to a loving song, a bit sad song. Lately, I've heard a lot of Goodbye, My Lover from James Blunt.
Oh, James Blunt. Goodbye, my lover. Goodbye, my friend. Yep, I know it.
That's a great song.
It is a good song, actually.
I remember when that album came out, so many women fell in love with him. Like all of my sister-in-laws. All of my girlfriends, everybody fell in love.
All of your girlfriends?
Their friends.
Oh, your girlfriends, got it.
Yeah, their friends all fell absolutely head over heels in love with this guy. And he had come back from, the Iraq War. And he was a soldier and he was singing over there and then he came back and then his career took off. But I don't know, was he one or two hit? Was he a couple of albums?
Oh, no, he had a few songs, I think, yeah.
Anyway.
That's great. Why don't we start, Tiziano, by you just telling us a little bit about yourself, because I'm really intrigued as to what you do and how you help people. And, I'm curious to find out. Let's talk.
I am full on into self-development since 2016, and I have discovered this beautiful modality called family constellations. I was going through a pretty rough time around that 2016, 2017. I opened up one of my businesses and it didn't go as well as was planned. So, you know, when things are not going that well, eventually you find yourself shoulder on the wall, back on the wall, and you always, I always say, in time of desperation, it's when you get the most light out of yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I discovered this beautiful modality called Family Constellation, which was developed by a German psychotherapist called Bert Hellinger. Bert Hellinger basically acknowledged to us, acknowledged and he developed eventually the modality which was already in existence, that the majority of our life struggle and issues and whatever we're going through comes from our system of belonging. So we carry the issue, the unresolved of our system of belonging. So I've discovered this modality, went to do the first session into that, and I completely fall in love with it. So I started to study it with many different facilitators, different teachers and workshop and this and that, until I actually made a full-time job in 2019.
Right.
So since 2019, I go around Australia first and around the world to do family constellations. So I observe the life of individual from their system of belonging, from their mother, their father, their grandparents, abortion, miscarriages, whatever happened into their system impacting their life. And so far, it's my biggest purpose and call in life. And I aim to make this literally a worldwide success and implement this modality all over the world.
So can you explain a little bit what it is, like system of belonging, but what does that mean, you know?
A system of belonging is your family, so the family of origin.
Yep.
So whatever happened into your life, it is what you carry from your system of belonging. Let's make a very simple example. If you have been dropped at childcare when you were 4, 5, or 6, perhaps you have experienced what we call an interrupted movement with your mother. An interrupted movement is a love that cannot make it. So you reach your mother, you extend your arms, seek your mother is not there, and you generate an emotion within yourself called sadness. So that experience of sadness go towards you, experience that sadness repeatedly all over your life like an abandonment. So perhaps you seek a partner who abandons you. You seek a boyfriend, a girlfriend that they feel they let you down, just as your mother let you down, unconsciously, of course, when you were 4 or 5. So what we do through family constellation, we re-experience this dynamic, what happened when you were 4, we release that sadness and we set you free.
Right.
So this is basically what we do through family constellations.
And then tell me, how is the process of releasing the sadness work? So how does that work?
Basically, Mitch, we present, we place in front of you a representative of your mother. Right. So we recreate the first movement, what has happened when you were 4.
Right.
So eventually by staying there, the representative, they enter in what we call morphic resonance. So they enter in morphic resonance to one another, and one individual manifests the mother and the other one obviously the son or the daughter. So when they are in front of one another and recreating that experience, the mother, perhaps she perceives some emotion that was perceived at the time,
right.
The same for the daughter and the son. So once the emotion comes up, it gets released naturally. And right. It's a beautiful process of reconnection.
I was watching a couple of the clips yesterday on your site, and I was like, wow, this is actually really cool. I really like how you had come in and said, okay, I want you to visualize your whole family, but also alive and dead and generational, and just see them in your mind. And I was like, that's actually very clever, because it allows you to really, because you said something like, okay, was there ever one of them that was like kind of isolated from everybody else? He was a little bit separate, she was a little bit separate. And I suppose in some ways you have to be careful that people are not, you know, they're not witch hunting, but also that they're, you know, if there is something there, that they're not inventing it, that I suppose that it's it is actually real for them, that has happened. And I just thought, how do you make sure that the client is not just inventing something? So they got an emotion and then they're going back and visualizing their family. But how do you make sure that the person is not going, okay, so I'm feeling this emotion, I need to attach it to something because I'm in this scenario with these people and we're doing this. And yeah, so that's my first question. And then the second question is, I mean, even if they were, as long as it's helping them to release it in some way, would it really matter?
They are two very intelligent questions, Mitch, and the first one particularly. So when you enter in resonance, what you perceive is magnetism. Magnetism is shivers, tears. It's basically the expression of the body through an emotion. This is also quantum physics that acknowledges to us that we are 99% energy. Mm. How do we perceive energy, whatever impact we have on our body and the other, through emotion? Perceive sadness, happiness, magnetism, shivers. That's how you perceive the movement. So when a person, as you say, invent a concept, perhaps, or they state something that is not true, the first acknowledgement of the observer, such as myself, is magnetism. There are no emotions in place. Uh-huh. So I perceive that there are no emotions. And what is my role, Mitch? I ask a further question.
Right.
So I see that there is no magnetism. My role is there's something that is not told. It's not something is not said.
Yeah.
So I'm asking a further question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The second question that you pose, if you can repeat it, please, because I lost a little.
So even if it is something that the psyche is inventing, because the psyche has a habit of fracturing, right? Like it just wants to fracture. And so even if it is fracturing, does it really matter if it's inventing something, as long as the outcome is that they're getting to heal it or they're getting to release it?
If they invent something, they wouldn't have the reaction, the emotional reaction to the body. But if something is true, it is perhaps stored into their psyche, into their subconscious. And as soon as they state the right phrase, this is why we also call family constellation the language of the soul. Once we bring the unconscious to the conscious, it has an effect. It has an effect out, obviously, through emotion and on matter, of course, as a consequence of that. So the most important thing is to perceive if there is magnetism or not. If there is not, a further question must be asked, and we need to excavate a little longer to go into the subconscious. Mm-hmm. As soon as there is the emotional reaction, it clicks right away.
So you're looking, because you're looking for what's happening at a subconscious level that the client isn't necessarily aware of, and you're looking for feedback in the reactions of the body to tell you, actually, I've connected with something that's happening subconsciously for that person. Is that what you're saying to me?
That is very accurate.
Right, okay. So, okay, that's cool. So what happens then in releasing it? What do they feel? What's different? Because, I mean, the language that you're talking, it's interesting to me because we do work where we're working with the subconscious at all times. Like when we're working with people, we've got a process that we use to help people to balance out their emotional states or balance out their perceptions of an event. And that happens at a deep level where we're watching and looking for the reactions as well.
Yeah.
But for us, we have a certain series of things that we're looking for that we can tell that the person has actually balanced out their lopsided perceptions. What are you looking for? What are you on the hunt for, and what are you trying to, what's the outcome of it for you?
I think what you're trying to say is how do you know? So when the person has cleared it,
Or released it.
What's the trigger that you go, oh, they've released it, that's good?
I cut this concept in two pieces because it is important also what you said, Mills. So if I observe the perception of the person, I cannot see it accurately. I need to see what is to acknowledge the subconscious in full, because the person could have faced whatever trigger and they might have created a reality around that trigger that is convenient for them.
Yeah.
So my role is to state what is, not what I think it is. Mm-hmm. Because at the moment that I state what is, I'm able to go deep into the subconscious and to seize the pressure of that action in their life. The first acknowledgement that I have is their face, their emotional state. Mm-hmm. How do they feel after the movement? The first observation is their face. I see immediately in their face if something has clicked or not. And second place, how they feel. How do I acknowledge how they feel in how they make me feel? So when I'm in front of them, for example, I give you a very quick example. Yesterday, I was working around a dynamic of murder, a murder that was hidden into the family. And as soon as I opened the Zoom call, which perception I was having? Anxiety. There was a secret that was not brought to the surface. So I was feeling anxiety through my body, and the person was perceiving anxiety to state this secret, let's say. So I excavated, and as soon as she told me, oh yeah, the brother of my mother was killed, and nobody ever told us why and this and that. So as soon as she told me that, I allow her to close her eyes, and we made a few statements around that. I'm ashamed, whatever little statement that I was perceiving. As soon as I stated that, I immediately perceive a change in my emotional state.
Right.
That anxiety ceased to exist in my body, left my body. And as soon as she opened her eyes, how do you feel? Oh, I feel like a burden has been lifted from my shoulder.
Right.
So that's the reaction I'm looking at.
Right,
okay,
got it.
Okay. So then I'm just going to ask a completely different question. So we are born and reared where?
Say that again.
You were born and you were raised where?
Italy.
Okay, and whereabouts in Italy?
Savona. It's a beautiful, stunning little place in north west Liguria,
close
to Cinque Terre.
Yeah.
And it's very similar, actually, where I live. Now I live in Bondi, Dover Heights, so very similar area. Okay.
Yeah. So you're living in Bondi now?
I live in Dover Heights, 5 minutes.
Okay, no worries. And then, so growing up as a kid in Italy, you know, you're 12 years old. What's on the walls of your bedroom? What posters have you got? What music are you listening to? What are your interests? Are you into soccer? What was it like?
12, 13 years old was for me a very, very, very difficult time. You pick literally the most difficult time of my life. My parents went through, I went through a very rough divorce, right, which was violence was involved. So I haven't seen my father for years. And around those years, I was like, I would call it a loose dog. Like, I didn't have much lead. But what kept me up was martial arts.
Okay.
So I got in love with kickboxing, Muay Thai, and I started to fight professionally very early in life, around 16 years old. And that's how I came to Australia, right, through kickboxing and Muay Thai. And that's how I also got my visa here.
Right.
Cool.
Right.
Combat sports was my biggest passion, has been my biggest passion since early, early ages. And let's say that I left that world around 2018, 2019 when I made the shift into what I'm doing now.
Mm. Right. And then, so you would have been, I mean, working with fighting and doing that sort of stuff is a very, it's all energy. It's all really, it's very all about reading the other person's body and your body and the moves, et cetera, et cetera. And then, so, what, it's a, was it the loss of the business and the failure of the company that moved you into this modality, or is that what happened?
That's right. And not only that, I opened up a company which I was importing, bringing boxing gears from Italy, right, leather boxing gears, right, from Italy. And I went in debt through with it, quite a substantial amount, over 100,000 euro.
Yeah.
So that was the pinnacle point for me to say life wants me to change, to shift.
Right.
And I just was losing. It wasn't only that what happened. I was also losing interest into that.
Right.
In passion, losing like the call for it. And I got this light, this spark through this modality, mm-hmm, my curiosity, my willingness to grow and to improve myself to... Mm-hmm. Yeah, that brought me here.
I mean, yeah, that's what happens. Life puts you like in a direction at times where you don't really expect it. So obviously your life transformed from you having that experience for yourself. So I want to just dive into a little bit more about what you do. So in terms of with the understanding of, say, the position in the family, does that make a difference to the dynamics in the constellation? Are you, what are you doing? Are you trying to have a look at what, you know, was somebody absent, or what was the dynamic in the family? Because, like, I'm the eldest daughter. Gabby is also the eldest daughter. Is that a, there's a whole thing around the oldest daughter, isn't there?
There are many dynamics around that, but you call it out, the pinnacle point, which was somebody was excluded, somebody was absent, a love that couldn't make it. So those are the major acknowledgement into constellation.
Right.
For example, I give you a very simple example. There was a child perhaps before you that was aborted or miscarried. That makes a consequence in your life experience.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
It's so funny, because before I was born, my mother had a set of twins that she miscarried.
Were they girls?
Both girls.
Yeah.
She miscarried them, I think it was the 26th week. And then she fell pregnant, and she fell pregnant about 12 weeks after that miscarriage with me.
With you.
And it's funny, because we know that the DNA gets carried on through the female. So I have, and I remember finding out about that, and it was like, fuck, that just made so much sense. I was like, there was like, you know, the other two brothers got a lot of love, but they really gave me a lot of love. My father's a really interesting dude. He's the second eldest of 25 kids. So his ability to relate to me and his ability to raise me as a father was amazing. But also my mother was very, very protective. She'd come from a very battered situation. My grandfather was extremely violent. He was a publican. He was an alcoholic. He used to bash them and sexually abuse them and do all that sort of stuff. But so I know that, and when my mother miscarried with these two kids, like, they used to go to the grave and visit the two children,
yeah,
in the grave before we came out to Australia. But when I realized that, one of the things I realized was that their life had given me life.
Yeah, you know, because I mean? You wouldn't have been born.
That was an extremely freeing thing to understand. So in what you're doing, Is that what you're doing? You're looking for what are some of the links, what's some of the light we can shed on this? How can we help them, not just emotionally, but also intellectually, to understand the cycle and the pattern?
You acknowledge, Mitch, something extremely important and accurate in constellation. For example, if a child was aborted before you, you might unconsciously carry what we call guilt. So you might come to me and say, hey, Tizi, I'm keep sabotaging my business. I reach a certain point and then I lose something happened and the business cannot flourish. And it happens once, it happened twice, it happened three times. So you come to me and I ask you a few questions. So we acknowledge this miscarriage before. And what is the interrupted movement between you and those children? Sadness. So perhaps an unconscious phrase that you might state is, thank you for your sacrifice and suffering for me to be here. So once you close your eyes and you visualize this, those children, your mother, perhaps your father, that they made this sacrifice and suffering, then they left this life experience and you came, you are able to release those tears, you are able to reconnect this interrupted moment. So we allow love to flow again.
Yeah, I really felt that when I understood that and when I had that sense of, I really felt as if they were with me. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of, I'm very effeminate in how I am, like I just am. And so I know that I have this very effeminate female energy, do you know what I mean, that's around me a lot. You know, it allows me to work with people. It allows me to, I know when to be tough and when to be hard and kick someone's teeth in, but I also know when to stop and be beautiful and warm and empathetic and understanding and help a person deliver, you know, whatever it is they need to come through with. But yeah, it's interesting how that plays out. So when I was watching what you were doing yesterday, I was like, okay, there's a lot in this. This is actually quite clever. Especially when people can start to use actual history, or how they perceive it, it's all perception, but how they perceive it to actually shift and heal. And
yeah. So go ahead.
I always describe me as in family constellation in this way. Imagine you live your life, you have a house. There are like six rooms in this house. One room is for health, one room is for purpose, one room is for relationship, the other room is for money. And let's say that there is one room where the light is not coming. So what we do as observer, as family constellator, we, as electrician, we reconnect the cable. So we allow love, the light, to come in this room back again. And light sometimes is like, Tizi, I cannot, I reach my last exam at the university, but I cannot complete it. I've done 36 exams, but the 37th does not come in, Tizi. So perhaps it's not coming because somebody is missing in your system. The cable is missing in that room. Once I acknowledge your grandfather who was lost in war and nobody spoke about him, you cry that sadness that was passed down into your family system. You complete that exam. And this is a case that I presented to you because it is on my website. It's a video that I've done with this girl in Italy. She couldn't complete this exam. Right. We have done a constellation in front of 80 people, and 3 months later, I say, Tizi, I'm graduating.
Nice, that's great. Nice, nice, nice. So, what other patterns or other systems do you? So, do you notice a difference between, like, what are some of the other things you notice? Do you notice a difference between where a person is born in the family, whether they're the eldest or the youngest? Do you notice a difference in? I mean, you've mentioned about like losing a child, or aborting a child. What else do you notice has an impact without us actually realizing?
The most profound experience that I've acknowledged over these last 7 years that I'm inside it is your birth. So the way you were born is showing us the way you live your life. For example, if somebody has gone through incubator, lamp, cesarean, forceps, anything that happened at birth that interrupt the movement between you and your mother, that is your first success. So the way you reach and pursue success, money, relationship is the same dynamic in which you were born. Life is a constant repetition of your birth experience, of your birth itself. I've done a huge workshop in Melbourne just 3 days ago with 50 people, and we have recreated this birth experience for everybody, and it was a life-changing experience. That is one of the most profound dynamic that I've acknowledged. We carry morphogenetically our birth imprinting. It's curious to say also that not more than 1 year and 6 months ago, the University of Queensland acknowledged us that we don't only carry energetically but we carry the imprinting of our ancestor even on our tissue, on our bone, on our bones, on our on a cellular level. So, for example, if I cut my arm knows, my body knows how to deal with that cut because my ancestors, they've dealt it already. And epigenetics acknowledges that. And that is cool because it's not only on an energetic level, you know, some people that they're a little bit less into energy, but it is actually on a matter level. Part.
Yeah, it's good when the docs are starting and the scientists are starting to acknowledge what the ancients have been saying for a long time. I think that's why we're in this particular age right now, and it's because it is an awakening age of and it takes science to do that, which I just think is fantastic.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk, like I've even seen a lot even around the fact that the way you're born makes a difference into how you come. Like if you are overdue and you're just taking your time, are you forced out? Are you induced out, or are you allowed to come through like in your own time? The cesarean makes a difference as well because you're
It's the first great separation, right? Like how was the first great separation? It's either way, you know, it that sense of separation is what starts to allow us to understand who we are, build our individuality, you know, because we're taking in information from that point on. You know, mum is not mum. We don't know that, right, when we're at zero. But, you know, that those formative years of 0 to 7 is where we're really formulating, okay, what is my imprint of how I operate in the world and move forward?
I had the cord wrapped around my neck.
Did you?
Three times the umbilical cord was wrapped around my neck. And mum, constant thing that she said to me over the years is that there was another kid in the hospital born at the same time who either, I can't remember what happened to him, but he was affected by it and the doctor said that I wasn't, like they were able to, it was okay for me, but
I tell you something about that because we just look at the case over the weekend. Most of the time when you are born with the umbilical cord around the neck is what we call systemically a birth movement towards death,
right?
Because obviously it takes away your oxygen, the capability to breathe, and sometimes that is a sign of a lost twin into the womb,
right?
We know that one every three children, there is a lost twin into the womb, so that you don't know because the fetus is lost around the third or fourth month.
Yeah.
When we recreate meals, the birth experience, when they generally come into the third or fourth month, there is a weight, a heavy sadness that they perceive through the body. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they fall on the floor and there is a lost twin into the womb. So perhaps when you come to life, your movement, yes, it is towards life, towards your mother, but he also looks towards death. Because death is present at the time of your birth experience.
Interesting.
So if I can just go back, growing up in Italy, did you have brothers and sisters?
We're jumping backwards and forwards.
I know.
It's all good.
I didn't. I was the only child. I'm only child.
Right. And then did mum and dad separate? Is that what happened?
They did split for the first time when I was 7, and they eventually ended up separating when I was 9. When I was 9, my father became violent towards my mom and kind of around me as well, spitting on me, things like that. So it was a very rough time for me. That led me to a lot of trouble into my teenage years. And I had a very, 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 very bumpy upbringing, you name it, and I call it, like, very, very bumpy. So I quite of that was a bit of a gift that allowed me also to go so in-depth with life, emotion, dynamic relationship. I actually really experienced life in depth. And at the end, that was the biggest gift. And now my dad is remarried. My mom, she's not, but they have a beautiful relationship. I go back to Italy every year, 3 months for work. I travel around. They're so proud of me. They come with me too. So we have a beautiful relationship.
That's magic. That's really, really good. Because I think sorting that sort of stuff out allows us, because I mean, I don't think people realize, but the formative years, some people do, look, the formative years are really about shaping our destiny and helping us to understand. So when I hear, okay, he's had a rough time and then he ended up in martial arts, that was obviously a way to be able to express and protect yourself and do all that sort of stuff and learn how to be able to handle tough situations. And then you know, you end up where you're working with people because you're handling other people that have had tough situations, and you need to know how to do that sort of stuff. You know, I'm always interested when I meet someone who's, you know, who's doing some good work, to know the background as to, okay, because the greater the void, the greater the value, the bigger the calling, the bigger the destiny, the greater the mission. So I love how you got on here and you said, you know, I want to be able to take this to the world. I want to be able to change the world with this. I think that really is fueled out of, okay, so how has he been tempered, and how has the individual been brought into the world to make sure that they have the vigor and the tenacity and the drive to be able to go and do what it is the person actually wants to do?
The biggest gift, Mitch, that I took from it is the absence of judgment. By going very extreme in life, I mean really, really extreme, I feel I lost the sense of judgment. So sometimes people come to me, even in worship, in front of so many people, like, I've been raped, or perhaps I have done something wrong, and I never look at them with judgment. I'm capable to go beyond that, yeah, and to see the love even behind such a horrible action.
Yeah.
See the core reason for such an action, the subconscious reason for such an action. Yeah. And that really allows me to help people. That is the biggest gift I feel I got from my past experience.
And I think, you know, it's a very common thing amongst practitioners who work at the coalface, where you are working with people that have experienced abuse and rape and neglect and all those sorts of things, and you're working with the abuser, the raper, the murderer, the killer. Like, even in our own careers, we've done that all the way through. You know, I just had a client on Monday sit down with me. I've known this kid for fucking, like, it's got to be 11 years, and on Monday he sat down with me and he said to me, I have to tell you something. And I'm like, okay. And he told me something, and he looked at me as if I was going to kick him out and I was going to just, you know, get the fuck out of my... And I was just like, dude, it's okay. It's all right. I love you. It's all right. You're loved. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It only matters if you're making it matter. And then if you are making it matter, then we need to do something about it. But you're the universe, you're loved. It doesn't matter. Everybody fucks up. Everybody. It doesn't matter who they are. Everybody fucks up. I actually spent quite a bit of time in prison myself. And one of the things that I found is that when I was in prison, I never met one person that didn't want to be in there.
That they wanted, they all of them wanted at some level to be in prison.
Every fucking one of them, every one of them wanted to be in there. Every one of them was in there. They will tell you, I didn't do it and did it. But after a little bit of time, you get talking to them, you know, they go, yeah, I need to be here. This is important, you know.
I think, go ahead.
Go ahead.
It is profound, Mitch and Miss, what you're saying, because I look at prison experience. I've gone in prison too. I'm very young also in life. And those kind of experience look towards the father. The father represents authority and structure. So when somebody has no structure in life, guess what? Life gives them the structure they miss. In prison, you have the structure you miss. So some people, they do prefer to be there rather than actually be outside, because outside they are loose dog. They don't have structure. Mm-hmm. They miss their father. They miss their purpose. They miss their direction. Yeah. At least in jail, they have structure, and they are forced to have that direction. So they have something forward to, which is freedoms eventually, mm-hmm, or redemption. So that is something that... Yeah.
Mm.
That is common in everybody who has that experience.
Yeah. I think, do you, like, when you look at, I don't know how much you, like, I don't watch the news, I don't pay attention to, you know, everyday stuff, but, you know, obviously there's big stuff going on in the world that you see and we notice. Do you notice a difference in the family dynamics and the focus on family? Like, I feel like, we moved over time, we move away from the focus on family, and we find our value, or we find, like, if you look at some of what's happening in America, just as an example, right, I feel like a lot of some of the problems that are going on there are because of the lack of family connections and the lack of family focus. Mm. Have you got views on that? What do you think about all of that?
Big time, Mills. So if you want to sabotage the life of an individual, you detach them from their family of origin, mm-hmm. from their value, from their extraction, for their roots. So they start to perceive themselves alone, and guess what? They start to take energy and strength and value from the external rather from the internal. Yeah. So you create an external dynamic that is sabotaging. So that person takes that external as value and is sabotaging themselves too. Mm-hmm. So once you reconnect that person with their family of origin, their structure, their belief, their value, even if it's disharmonious, you take the good out of it. So you give to that tree healthy roots. Yeah. So that tree eventually bear the fruits of that those healthy roots. Mm-hmm. But if you detach them from their family of origin and you give them, for example, an external form of authority, call it the government, for example, then you make certain rules in the government that they can sabotage that person. Guess what? That person sabotage their life. Mm-hmm. Because you give to them externally what they cannot find within.
Yes.
But what we do through family constellations, psychogenealogy, everything that reconnects it to the root, we bring them back to healthy roots, to their system of belonging, to their family of origin. We reconnect, we restore those interrupted movements. So life, love, energy can flow again. That individual comes up healthy.
Yeah, I like the way you've described it, because it's not about saying, hey, we're all going to have the same opinions or views or any of that sort of stuff. But what I've seen there, or what, you know, the person has perceived there is the disconnection. And when you show them that there's light there, then it's in so many ways it's very similar to what we do, because we're showing them, like, how we work is we work with a person's perception of their reality, and they don't even realize that that's their perception. All they know is something that's happened, like a story that's happened or something. And then when you show them the truth in what's happened and the beauty in what's happened and bring light to that scenario, they cannot look at their mother or their father the same way ever again. They have, you know, if I've grown up thinking that I was abandoned or neglected, I will review that scenario with a different lens and just say, I was loved, you know, and that's the, when you can do that, like you said, it doesn't mean that I'm now best friends with this person or I'm, you know, but it means that there was light there. It means that there was love there, and that transforms everything.
Yeah. I just find that one of the things that happens with people is, you know, they ultimately know it's there. You know, and everybody is the same in essence. We're all just energy. We're all a conduit for energy, and energy is just love, consciousness. It's just extraordinary. It's omnipotent. It's everything. And so I find that when a person has generational stuff that's gone on, the reason they're frustrated and annoyed is not innately is never actually because of what has gone on. It's because they've lost the connection. Mm-hmm. So I find that when they see that, and then they, oh my God, it just obliterates any view that they've ever had of what had gone on, you know, and they can only see it as love.
Mm. I give you a personal example just to what you share. When I was 13 and I didn't have my father around, what did I do? I look for a leader, for a father, for a value externally. So my area, Savona, is well known in Italy. It's essentially well known for criminality. So guess what? I perceive from the criminal of the area, oh, they respect him, they fear him. So I connected respect, fear, right, to respect, and so to love. So what I connected in my brain is, if I want to be loved, I need to be just like him. So I pursued that path of criminality because I was seeking what I couldn't find within my father. Then life obviously brings you always towards the better. It moves you towards the better. It moves you towards reconnect what has been separated. Mm-hmm. So from the criminal of the area, I saw kickboxing as another form of leadership, of another form of value. So I saw the best fighter in the area. Oh, everybody fearing him, everybody respecting him. So I move from that criminality perception to, oh, I want to be a good fighter, so everybody loves me, everybody respects me. Ultimately, what we seek, everybody, love.
Yeah.
what do we perceive? At those ages, love was like, oh, they bash everybody, they deal drugs, so they love them, they value them, they respect them, so I must do like them to be loved.
Right.
That's what I perceive.
Right, right.
Eventually, I grew up, I must be a good fighter because they love him, they fear him, and so on. And then businessman, and then where I am. Mm. Yeah. So it's just an upgrade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy how that happens, you know, that it always seems to be driving us back into that state of equanimity, back into that state of balance. But the pursuit, no matter what, you know, we're all just trying to be loved. It doesn't matter who it is. You know, when we sit, I've sat with situations and cases that have turned a person's hair white, like, you know, like crazy stuff. And when you sit and talk and you're able to get all of that stuff out of the way, because it's just fucking stuff. When you get all of that out of the way, it at an innate level, everybody just wants to know, am I loved? You know, am I enough and am I loved? And when a person sees that, I've just found over time that, you know, the most miraculous situations I've seen is when a person, no matter how tough or how hard they were, and no matter how many people they killed, when they get that they were loved, it changes everything. They cannot go backwards. It's like there's a reset within the brain, within the actions. They cannot go backwards because the pursuit of true crime and everything else to try to find the love, if they realize that I had it there the whole time. So it's like suddenly they become a blank canvas. You know, and in some way, it can be a little bit scary for them because I'm like, well, fuck, if I'm not that, who am I? You know, if I'm not that, then what am I? But when you grab a person then and you're able to say, okay, well, you know, as my mentor said to me, look, if you can create that much of a fucking mess, you can create anything. So why don't we just create something more beautiful? And why don't we just create something more incredible? And I was so glad she had that conversation with me because that's where we went when I realized that, you know, we're loved for who we are, not for what we've done. People don't give a flying fuck about what you've done. They love you for who you are. And in essence, there, if who we are is love, then we're all in a state of love at some level, you know.
The most fulfilling experience of life is to serve others. Mm. In Constellation, we reflect joy towards the Father. So when the Father comes back home, the most joyful experience of an individual is their Father bringing the adventure that the exit experience over the world home to their children. Their children, they jump all around, Dad, how was your day, and this and that. So that is the most joyful experience.
Right.
The Father is also a reconnection to purpose, about what you were saying. What is the most loving and joyful experience in life? When you serve others, when you are in your purpose, when you are close to your Father.
Yeah.
So we are Father to the purpose and to serve others. Mm-hmm. For me, when I do my sessions, when I do my job, when I do what I'm doing now, even now, just through this conversation, just serving others, it makes me extremely joyful. And so I feel full in wholeness and love within.
Mm-hmm. I think when you know, we talk about, you know, with the work that we do, we're often talking about parents, like with the work you're doing, you're talking about parents. And so once we're explaining this information to people, one of the things that we notice, or that I notice, is that they, like, people are like, hang on a second, have I messed up my kids? Have I done something that's going to mess up my kids? And we say to them all of the time, part of the reason that you can't make a mistake, essentially, because everything has its purpose, everything is in order. But the reason that a parent has a conflict with seeing the order in what they've done is because they haven't seen the order in what happened to them. Do you know what I mean? And so so essentially they're like, I'm a little bit afraid to see that I'm okay, because that means that everything that my mum and dad did was actually okay. And I'm not saying that it was right or wrong. I'm saying that you are the person that you are now as a result of them. So is there anything with the work that you do to help a parent who's in the middle of that, who's potentially got kids around them, or, you know, there's the potential perception of the disconnect? How do you help people that are in the middle of it rather than people just looking back at the at their own parents. Does that make sense?
Clear and accurate. So the most healthy unfolding for, let's start from the beginning. So as you said, parents are always right. Why they're always right? Because they always give the right experience to their children. One of the most common dynamic and work in, that I do in my workshop is to state, you are the only right mother for me. You are the only right father for me. Why? Because the experience you have given me, you are giving me and you gave me is the only right one for me. Mm-hmm. So the more a parent wants to unfold harmoniously towards the children, the more they need to work in themselves. What does it mean to work in themselves? To accept their parents just as they are. Mm-hmm. That means to take their parents just as they are. Mm-hmm. Many people are like, what does it mean, Tizi? Take them just as they are means to whatever you have given me is right. But if I blame them, scold them, refuse them, stamp my feet on the floor, I did not take them as they are. Mm-hmm. I still have some interrupted movements with them. Mm-hmm. The more I restore in me those interrupted movements and the less consequences I leave to my children and to the coming generation. So the more work I do within myself and the more freedom I give to my children, simple as that.
Yeah, I love that answer. I think that's very similar to what we
do. So how do you make sure when you're dealing with a client? So one of the things, how we do it is that we look for, okay, what's the core thing? What is that one innermost dominating thought? What is that one, you know, because we know if we can get them to see it with that, then they'll know it's everywhere. Because one of the things I found years ago when I first got into this industry is that, you know, it was a never-ending line of people, you know, with wanting to heal things. And I was like, well, I mean, when I got it, I didn't do work because I was broken. I did PD work because I just fucking loved it. You know, I was just like, just love this stuff. I'm not coming to you because I'm broken. And so one of the things I wanted to make sure that when I was working with people is, you know, because people are susceptible to suggestion, and when they're vulnerable, they, you know, they can keep inventing things. Oh, I've got this problem over here. Oh, it's got to be because of this generational thing. I've got this problem over here. Oh, because have I got a mummy issue? And have I got a... So people witch hunt, you know, they look for issues to be able to explain how they're feeling. So how do you guys make sure that's not happening? Do you go for one thing, or how do you do it? How do you police it?
First of all, Mitch, the best client is the one that is desperate, as I said before. Why? Because the more desperate they are, the more they susceptible to change.
Yeah.
Sometimes the most difficult clients are therapists. Why? Because therapists, they have created a lot of concepts and walls of protection around their issue.
Yeah.
So a good therapist in front of them needs to connect with their perception. Are they actually telling me the truth, or I don't feel that? Mm. The most accurate perception is my body. When somebody comes in front of me and tells me, hey, this is yellow, but actually I perceive black, the first things that I do, I disregard the yellow and I point the black.
Right.
I keep pointing the black. I keep trusting my gut feeling. Why? Because there is an higher intelligence which guides me to serve this person, and right, that has brought this person to me. So I never doubt myself. If they tell me yellow, okay, I listen consciously, but I immediately connect to my feeling. The body connects me with the morphogenetic field, mm-hmm, this field of existence energy that we are all connected to. So I know that despite the yellow is their own concept, which is the touch from me, mm-hmm, I go in what connects me to them, the black, the field.
Mm-hmm.
So I stay to the field and I keep pointing question around that, mm-hmm, until obviously the person is open to share a little more details, something more. Another simple things that I share with you. You see, when something you state is right, because it makes you feel you expand in the body, and also the other person is opening. Yeah. When the other person or you state something that is wrong, you feel the body is contracting.
Mm-hmm.
The body immediately close up. So how do I receive feedback if is what I stated is right? I feel openness in my body, and okay, that openness in them immediately.
Right. And then do you have many people coming back to work with you?
Yeah, so family constellation is not a psychological approach, so it doesn't need much to, it's not every week session. Yeah. But of course, we give also theoretical understanding through systemic lens. But let's say that my most common clients is three times over here. Some people really fall in love with the modality, they want to learn more, they come more. So I have a beautiful online systemic library with the theory on my site. But three times over here, I would say, that's my average. Yeah, yeah. Cool. Sometimes they come five, but 2-3 times over here is a good call.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So you're noticing, obviously, you're looking at patterns and it's appearing through the patterns and the cycles that they're experiencing, and through that you're seeing, okay, there's something going on here that's causing the block is basically what you're saying, isn't it?
That is very accurate. Also, going back to each question, how many times they come, Niels, which is connected also to this question. When you do a movement on a morphogenetic level, many areas are opening up. So, for example, if I do a movement towards the mother, mm-hmm. it's not only that movement which could have been relationship, but actually success, mm-hmm. money, emotional binge eating, for example, like many areas open up because the archetype of a mother encounter many areas. That's why they don't need many movements. 2-3 times, one movement open another, perhaps this pattern open up other pattern which they were underneath, and eventually we get free on the second session, the third session. But yeah, I tell me I have a problem with alcoholism. I know that alcoholism is connected to the father. So I know immediately which question to ask you. Why? Because I've observed it hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. So yes, pattern tell me where to look at. Eventually, more accurately, my inner feeling, my inner guidance.
So actually, that's a good, I was going to kind of tidy, you know, close this up, but just that's led me to another question or another couple of questions. So if you see alcoholism as tied to the father, if somebody's like, have you got, are there standard things that you notice are tied in to different issues? Like if somebody's got money issues, do you have certain, like, does that lead to certain patterns? Success issues, relationship issues. Can you speak into that a little bit?
Accurately. Money, success, and relationship, they look towards the same individual, your mother. Mm-hmm. Why? Because birth is your first success. Your way towards your mother is your first success. So every pattern that relate to success relate to the archetype of the mother. Money unconsciously relate to nurturing. Who is the first person who nurture you? Your mother. So when somebody comes to me, Niels, and tells me, oh, I don't care about money, what they unconsciously tell me is, I don't care if my mother is there or not, I can survive regardless. That is a big statement that they make. Relationship, who is the first person who you relate to? Your mother. So every relationship is the same imprinting that you have with your mother to the dot. Bert Hellinger stated to us before he left the patch of this world, no mother, no relationship. When somebody is detached from their mother, they detach from relationship.
Right. Mm. Cool. Mm. Very cool.
Very interesting.
Okay, I cool. absolutely love this. Can you tell us
let us
can
know
people
how
find you and when are you next around in Australia?
Well, you're in Australia now anyway, aren't you?
I am, yeah. Yes. But I have a 3-month off workshop because I restart in March. We have Queensland, the first and the second in Queensland. And we have Perth in April. We have Sydney in the 8th and 9th of March as well. And they can find me easily on Instagram at Tiziano_Sguesso, TIZIANO_SGUERSO. And on my website, www.tizianosguesso.com, we have heaps of content. We give so much sharing. I actually been the first one to bring a family constellation in public eyes through videos and statements and literally real experience in 2019. And that has been my biggest goal and what I'm pursuing.
What happens in those workshops, Tiziano?
2 days. 1 day, 2 days?
2 days, 2 days. So we do Saturday and Sunday, usually the 9:30 to 4:30, and we do a full family constellation process through whatever is the topic at the time. Most of the time, latest, I'm doing the lately one are rebirth experience. So we recreate the birth pattern, and some people actually experiencing accurately from the Friday to the Sunday when they release the workshop. They're like, wow, that what has happened. So
yeah,
they
that's really, awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, I love that you're doing this work. Tiziana, it was lovely, lovely to talk to you today. Thank you.
Thanks for giving us your time, and it was great to hang out. And I always love meeting other facilitators who are just on a mission. It's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Same here, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Cheers. Appreciate it. Ciao, ciao.